Time to get our local view. See what he's up to on the front pages of the Register Guard. Catch up online. It's registerguard.com. On Twitter, the handle is at Austin Meek RG. Our Tuesday leadoff man steps in. Austin, how's it going?
Good, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. I'm starting to think now. We've got theme music when we bring on Aaron Fentress, but for like you and George, I think we might have to ask if you prefer any walk-up music. So this is what your mission is for the next week.
Walk-up music. Okay, I'll think about that. I'll come back with something good for you next week.
All right. Alex, for some reason, is suggesting Tupac. I have no idea where he's getting that from.
Well, I actually get that a lot. I walk down the street and people just think of Tupac when they see me. So.
Gangsta columnist on the line. So today's article, as a Midwesterner, when people think of, I guess, outdoors and the aesthetics, Kansas probably doesn't come to mind as compared to Oregon. I can attest even Jersey's kind of legendary for camping, but let's begin with your memories, first of all, going camping or outdoorsman experiences as a Kansan.
Well, yeah. So growing up in Kansas, I spent a fair amount of time outdoors. I lived in kind of a rural area, but nature in Kansas is not exactly what you think of when you think of nature in Oregon. So, yeah, you know, it was kind of the classic Midwestern experience of giant mosquitoes and campfire smoke and waking up with a sore neck from sleeping on the ground. And, you know, you go fishing and you throw your lure in the pond and you come back with a giant clump of moss. I don't want to disparage my home state. I love Kansas. There's a lot of things I miss about it. But it definitely was a change moving to Oregon, as you can probably attest. Steve, are you an outdoors person? Do you like to go out and camp and hunt and fish and do all that?
I've never hunted. Our thing in Jersey was there's something called the Delaware River, Delaware Water Gap, whitewater rafting, which is actually really fun, but you're not sitting there. You know what I mean? To me, fishing would be like a penalty as opposed to a project or something like that. But I saw that, you know, what you wrote is now you're a dad of a 2.5-year-old and having a 3.5-year-old grandson, that you all of a sudden they're little people. And in today's article, you were asked, or you were looking for suggestions, kind of, for what to do now that you want to kind of, I guess, form a bucket list. I'm kind of curious, what have folks who are wired into the outdoors around here have to say to you?
Well, I've gotten a lot of great suggestions so far. I've probably gotten at least a dozen come through just this morning, and a pretty wide range of things, you know, all over the state. Mary's Peak, I've gotten from a couple different people. Steens Mountain, I've heard from some people. Obviously, Crater Lake is a popular one. So, you know, I'm forming a long list of things to do this summer, which is great. That's what I was hoping for because, you know, as I wrote in the column, this will be my fourth summer now in Oregon, and
right.
It's something that I've really wanted to do since we moved here, is get out and explore the state because there's so much cool stuff in such close proximity. But I've realized that, you know, I kind of assumed that it was going to happen, but it does take some effort. You got to be intentional about it because summer get really busy, you know, with the track meets and baseball games and everything that's going on here in the summer. The sports calendar doesn't really slow down much in the summer. So I decided this year I was really going to, you know, take the initiative to be very intentional about it and make a list and get out and explore. And so far the readers have been very helpful in giving me some great suggestions.
Sounds awesome. Basically, my idea of outdoors is golfing. I'm actually not saying that sarcastically because that's the extent of it. I'm not going to be the one who's there when the river rises or when the bears. I know you referred to yourself, if you were a survivalist, would you say you would be bear food?
Yeah. Well, that's me too. Like, my idea of being out in nature is like, can I go to a baseball game and sit outside and eat a hot dog?
Right.
Does that count? I don't know.
All right. Let's let's get to the Oregon softball team. A bit of a scare Saturday, bounce back, then run ruled their way to another super regional. You wrote about one of our favorites, Jenna Lilly. Of course, had that scary moment, struggled at the plate most of this year. Then it seems like since Florida State, she's kind of come around. But what did she have to say before this series about the step she and the coaches were taking to kind of, you know, snap her out of her hitting woes?
Well, I'm always interested to talk to high-level athletes about how they deal with failure, because it's something that every athlete, if you're good enough to get a college scholarship and play at the Pac-12 level, at some point you're going to deal with failure. And if you've been successful your whole life at every level, as Jenna Lilly has, how do you deal with it if you have a season like she's had where you just don't perform up to what you know you're capable of doing? So I thought it was a pretty interesting conversation, and she was pretty open about just psychologically how difficult it was for her to go through basically a whole year where she just wasn't hitting. And she went through a lot of different things, tried to make a lot of adjustments. I think Mike White kind of suggested that at some point she maybe was making too many adjustments and it, you know, had gotten so complicated. I think he just kind of told her to go back to basics. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. I think a lot of it really is mental and psychological. You know, she said before that Florida State series, she found something in the batting cage with how she shifted her weight and her swing that felt good. And whether that was really the answer or just something that allowed her to have a little more confidence, I don't know. But whatever it was, she started feeling more comfortable. And when she started feeling comfortable, she started performing better. So that's always the interesting thing for me to dig into with athletes is, you know, the interaction between the physical and the mental side of it and how much, you know, the physical results can change based on your mental approach to it.
Yeah, well, she's 11 of 19 since Florida State. So maybe it was a combination of her finding that and getting it written about in the paper. I want to get to Edward Cheswick. Dominates in the Pac-12s. Then we learn he's got a back injury, and that's it. He's not competing for Oregon anymore. So from reflecting on the amazement of his career to the sudden end before the NCAAs, I mean, you've covered him. What popped into your mind when you heard this news?
Well, it's too bad that the NCAA meet is not going to be sort of the crowning achievement for Edward Cheswick. I mean, it was a chance for him to really put a cap on his career, which has been an incredible career. 17 NCAA titles. He's in a league of his own in terms of his performance in championship races. Obviously, the ramifications for Oregon as a team are pretty devastating. If Oregon had a shot to win it before, it's hard to see how they could win it now as a team because, you know, Edward Cheswick, you were looking at potentially two individual titles in the 5 and the 10,000. So it stinks for Oregon. It stinks for him. I'll be interested to see where his legacy ends up in terms of the great track and field athletes that have been here. You know, because obviously you think about Galen Rupp and you think about Matthew Centrowitz and, of course, Steve Prefontaine. And, you know, Edward Cheswick won more NCAA titles than any of those guys. But I think people understand that, you know, the legacy is more than just the titles. That's part of it. It's not the whole thing, but it is part of it. You know, it's a big part of it. And the fact that he performed so well in championship races, I think, will put him on the list somewhere as one of the greats to come out of Oregon.
Yeah, I think if you put he, Rupp, and Jordan Hesse, and you listed their accomplishments, I mean, you could do like a segment on this show just reading the list. I wanted to get your take on Major League Baseball. This might sound strange, but I was just looking through the leaders, and I'm a pretty big fan. And most might be familiar with guys like Manny Machado, probably heard of Jose Altuve, Justin Turner. But is it me or with like guys like Ortiz and even A-Rod and Jeter now retired, is there a kind of an anonymity problem as far as MLB exposure for its great best players? Does that sound reasonable?
Well, Steve, let's call this what it is. I know it's been hard for you since Jeter retired.
I'm struggling.
The Jersey retirement, I'm sure that was, you know, I'm sure that brought back a lot of memories. I went through this when George Brett retired. You'll get through it. There's a lot of fish in the sea. I know it feels like it'll never be the same, but just, you know, fight through it. I think you actually bring up a pretty good point. And I would test out this theory on you. I actually think the young stars in baseball right now are pretty compelling. When you look at Bryce Harper and Chris Bryant and Mike Trout, those are three guys who are 25 and younger who are the future of baseball, and that future is pretty amazing. You know, I think the future of the sport is in great hands with some of the young superstars in the game now. But I think there is a lack of really iconic players in the game now that some of those guys you mentioned, like Ortiz and Jeter, have retired. I mean, when you look at the guys who are going to be retiring over the next 5 years or so, who are the real, you know, iconic players or the surefire Hall of Fame players? I guess you could say Justin Verlander, Pujols, Miguel Cabrera. Those are the first three that come to mind as players kind of on the backside of their careers who are going to be retiring soon. But there's not really, you know, there's not a Derek Jeter. And, you know, Derek Jeter only comes around, you know, once in a lifetime. It's not like you're going to have a Jeter every year or every era. But, you know, who's the best 30-year-old baseball player right now?
No, it's an awesome question.
Like, there's a gap between the young guys and then the older generation.
No, we're going to actually pick this up way later. But for baseball fans, it's almost like I challenge people to go, like, give me your first, you know, go around the horn, give me your three outfielders, a starting rotation of superstars. I think a lot of people would probably struggle a bit. But anyway, like I said, that sounds like also a good, like, mid-July conversation. Mm-hmm. I want to talk with Austin Meek, the Register guard. A lot of people are bashing the NBA playoffs as unwatchable. And so far, aside from Game 3 of the East, they might be right. Last night was just a blowout. Any reason to pay much attention until they just decide to give us Warriors Cavs? And is there any hope that all these doldrums might pay off in a great championship round?
I think that is the hope, yeah, that, you know, the blowouts we've endured throughout the playoffs will have a payoff when the Cavs and the Warriors eventually meet up. But, you know, it's too bad. I thought both of these championship series had a chance actually to be pretty good, but injuries on both sides have really derailed that. You know, I thought the Spurs Warriors series could have been compelling, but then Kawhi Leonard gets hurt.
Right.
That basically eliminates any chance for that series to be competitive. And Isaiah Thomas gets hurt for the Celtics, and that obviously changes the dynamic of that series in a big way. So, yeah, it's just, so far, the NBA playoffs have kind of been a snooze, but I do think that Warriors-Cavs will be compelling. I think that our patience in putting up with all these blowouts eventually will be rewarded with a great NBA Finals. But it's been kind of hard to stick with it, I'm not going to lie.
No, I've been calling it the check-in playoffs. I see on my phone, oh, it's a 20-point game. All right, find something else to do. Let's wrap with this. The NFL is trying to, I guess, lose their No Fun League moniker from rules on celebrations. 2 years ago, they said if you scored a TD, you couldn't dunk over the crossbar. And now they say perhaps last season they maybe went too far with penalties. Well, you know, there's schools of thought. Act like you've been there. It's a passionate game. Let the guys rejoice. If it's not taunting, who cares? Where do you stand on all this?
I'm just glad to see Roger Goodell tackling the real pressing issues facing the NFL right now. The overtime was too long, and the celebration rules obviously were a huge deal. So I'm glad that they have addressed those very, very serious and pressing issues.
Nice.
You know, the celebration thing, hey, it's a game. Guys are having fun. Let them have fun. That's my thing. I am not one of those people who, you know, says get off my lawn and, you know, throw the ball to the ref and act like you've been there before. I don't mind if guys show a little bit of emotion, so I'm glad that they'll be able to make the snow angels now.
So, yeah, the domestic violence and long-term consequences of your game, you get around to that, but you cut 5 minutes off overtime, and we're all feeling good about it. Is that accurate?
Priorities. It's all about priorities.
All right. Keep up with Austin, as always. Sports page, cover the Register Guard, registerguard.com, at Austin Meek RG on Twitter. Sir, always a pleasure. Enjoy it. Have a good week.
All right. You too, Steve.
Take it easy.